Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a new romantic comedy hits theaters this week. It's called Maggie's Plan, and it stars Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Bill Hader, Julianne Moore. It's the fifth film from director Rebecca Miller, who not only directed the movie but adapted it from chapters from a friend's novel. It's a comedy about modern romance, trying to control destiny, and the complicated lives are afforded from living in this day, this age, this time. In other words, what do you do when you suspect your man and his ex-wife are actually perfect for each other? Wow. Rebecca Miller is the writer and filmmaker of this film, as well as The Ballad of Jack and Rose, The Private Lives of Pippa Lee. It's my honor to have Rebecca Miller at the big table tonight. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
What drew you to taking these chapters and turning it into a movie?
My friend Karen Rinaldi sent me the chapters, and she said, I have a feeling that Maggie's story might be a good movie, and I read the chapters. And I thought, wow, this could be a great premise. And I started working out from there. I was looking for something on the more funny side and something to be set in New York, and it fit the bill.
Obviously, you've written, you're a novelist, and you've been able to write screenplays and direct films. Was there something easy, difficult in the process of taking some unfinished work and trying to turn it into a film?
Well, I was lucky enough to be able to talk to Karen Rinaldi because she's a really good friend of mine. So I was able to kind of pick her brain about where some of these ideas came from, since I did change quite a lot. So I wanted to know what to change, what to keep, where the roots were. I guess it made it easier in a way because I'm not used to being sort of given the hook. I did end up building the characters on my own, but the hook, the idea of something where you have a concept in the center, I'd never been given that before. And it was, so in some ways it made it harder, in some ways it made it easier. I knew that it was perfect for a kind of screwball romantic comedy of the sort of type of like the 1940s that I love so much, Preston Sturges and, you know, Philadelphia Story and all those wonderful movies. It reminded me a little bit of that kind of tone. So I tried to go for something like a really modern take on that.
Well, the movie starts, I mean, right away, the first scene out the gate, Maggie declares her intention wants a baby, and is not in a committed relationship. She's like, this is the plan for my life. I'm ready. She's young. She's like, I want to have a baby, and she's trying to figure out the right partners. Why start the movie there? I mean, obviously, that's a big part of it, but it was so crisp, and I love the concept of it. It's just sort of like, right away, we're right into it.
Yeah, boom, you're right in the middle of it. Well, I mean, part of it is that she's got this plan to have a baby with a donor who's a math major that she went to college with, and that she really didn't know that well, but has a fairly odd personality. But as she says, you know, no one's perfect. And the thing is that ultimately those plans get quickly derailed when she meets John. So, and then she falls into this much more kind of romantic relationship, and then that ends up being derailed, and then she goes in another way. So she keeps making plans, thinking she knows where she's going. Every time she thinks she knows where she's going, a curveball gets thrown.
Yeah, let's talk about Maggie, because that seems to be the heart and soul of her, is that she does really, at her core, want to plan things out. She's ready to go. And curveballs throughout this movie keep coming to her, and she comes up with a new plan. But there is something about her that is really stated, but also, you know, by the end of the movie, you really do feel that, you know, she could be like anybody in the sense that we all have plans and things happen.
Yeah, I think she's very relatable. I think everybody has to plan a little bit just to live, just to get out of bed and go to work or go anywhere. You have to plan a little bit. And then there are the people who want to plan for everyone else's good. And that's Maggie's situation. But I mean, I think, you know, somebody was saying to me the other day, I've been Maggied, which is kind of like perfect. It's like somebody who's just bossed you into doing something for your own good. You know, I think everybody knows a Maggie or somebody, or they may themselves have a bit of Maggie in them. And she's a really kind of adorable character. You can't really hate her because she really does try to do everything for other people's own good. It's just that she goes way past what normal people would do, yeah. I would say.
But I mean, it's such a great complex character because, you know, at the beginning, by stating her plan and starting the movie strong with this is my plan, this is what I'm going to do, you see the roadblocks, you know, coming as the viewer. You see it. Here comes Ethan Hawke. Here comes other people in the movie and other situations. And you watch her kind of persevere or overcome those kind of things. It makes for a very complex character.
Absolutely. I think she is a complex character because she's, on the one hand, she can be you could see her as manipulative, but she's also kind of has a real innocence about her and a goodness about her. And, you know, the fact that she's a Quaker was sort of important mm-hmm. to me. We arrived at that. Me and Greta were sitting in her little studio apartment at one point, and we said, you know, I don't remember who said what, but somehow we came up with the idea that she's a Quaker. I always knew she had some religious background. It just seemed perfect that she was a Quaker, and also the way she dresses and things has such an unusual modesty and yet this great sense of color, and the idea that she sort of dresses for herself, to please herself. She's just an unusual character, but she's also kind of very relatable. She's kind of a girl next door in a way. Then that's a lot of that is down to Greta, I think, because Greta's mm-hmm. just has this wonderful quality of being both unique and very relatable at the same time.
Throughout the movie, I mean, the characters, the acting in it is just superb. I mean, you're talking about Ethan Hawke, Greta Gerwig, Julianne Moore, who's just, I mean, she really almost, I mean, steals the show with her performance. But let's talk about the roles that, you know, in this. There's a lot that goes into the roles that we play. You know, Maggie's character has a lot to do with, like you said, she's got a plan. This is what she's doing. She's a great support, but she's a little bit manipulative in the way that she tries to make everybody do what they're supposed to do. Then there's, you know, Ethan Hawke's character, where he's the novelist who's just looking for someone to love his stuff. It's more complex than that. But then, and then Julianne Moore, who's already the accomplished writer, who isn't giving that back. I mean, there's a lot going on, the dynamics, but this movie does center around the roles that we play in these relationships.
Right, and also how the roles change depending on who we're with. And you see how Ethan Hawke's character, John, is one person when he's with Georgette, which is more, at one point he says, every relationship has a gardener and a rose. And the idea is that when he's with Georgette, who's Julianne Moore's character, he's definitely the gardener and she's the rose. And he's sort of sick of being the gardener. So he finds Maggie, who's a gardener. He becomes a rose. Then he's a complete rose, does nothing at all to take care of anything and ends up sort of almost using her. And it's really, what's interesting is it's like, I do think that people, depending on who you're with, you change. And some of finding the right person is liking yourself when you're with a person. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that person bring out in you? And you definitely see how people switch depending. And that's something that's brought up a lot in the movie, is that, you know, what one woman brings out in John versus another woman. Yeah.
So, I mean, what was it about that story that drew you to writing about relationships in this way? Because that's so accurate when you think about everybody and every relationship. I mean, there's something so personal about that. What was it as a filmmaker that you wanted to explore in that regard?
Well, you know, I guess it had been in the air. Some of this was just in the air. I remember having tea with Julianne one afternoon, maybe a year before I got these chapters in the mail. And she said, you know, I have a friend who left her husband and a big cloud of romance for somebody else. 5 years pass, and she's spending all her time organizing people's, you know, school pickups, coordinated vacations,
two families,
blended family. And she said, and she's like, you know, maybe I should have just stayed with my husband because now it's just a big pain in the neck. So I was just, I had that in my mind. Then I read these chapters about blended families, about how complicated it is, about the idea of trying to put, you know, stuff what happened back in the box. As Bill Hader says, you can't just stuff what happened back in the box, because he keeps yelling at Maggie because he's his, you know, her kind of best friend and always tells her the truth. And I think actually his character is basically the audience, like what the audience is often thinking is like, what are you doing now? But anyways, so when I read these, you know, I it kind of echoed that conversation that I'd had with Julianne. And I think like I wanted to find a way of talking about how we live now when the rule book's been thrown out. All the ways that we're supposed to have a family have multiplied by a million. You can have a family in so many different ways, so many different possibilities, with or without a partner, or partnerships change. And, you know, who are we now? And what do we mean to each other as men and women? And, you know, in a way, we have so much choice, which is beautiful. And that freedom is beautiful. But it also is kind of weighty. It's kind of light and weighty at the same time.
Rebecca Miller is my guest tonight. She's a filmmaker. Her film Maggie's Plan is out in theaters this week, starring Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore. Let's continue the conversation after a break here. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Rebecca Miller, longtime filmmaker and writer, her new film, Maggie's Plan, comes out this week. Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Bill Hader, Maya Rudolph, Julianne Moore, star-studded cast, great film. It's the fifth for Rebecca Miller, who's my guest tonight. We were talking about relationships right before the break. I mean, that really is at the core of this movie. I mean, it really is about how many different variations we can have on the sort of quote-unquote marriage and relationship. There's so much going on around us. It's not like it was in, say, the 50s.
Absolutely. Or even, like, really the 80s, the 90s. I mean, I think that things are changing constantly in terms of what's acceptable. Of course, people were having unusual family arrangements, but now it's much more acceptable. And I'm finding that women in their late 20s, early 30s really connect with this movie, partly because they identify with that thing of, I can live so many different ways. How do I want to have children? How do I want to live my life? You know, and they're not going to just take it from somebody of how they're going to live their life. They're going to make a decision on their own. So I think in that sense, Maggie's conundrums speak to them.
With Ethan Hawke's character, I mean, it starts the movie with this, you know, as we expect, a setup to an affair. And then, it quickly flashes to, you know, what we would think would happen is he left his wife and everything is good, but it's not necessarily the case. I mean, the same problems that were in the first marriage, maybe in the second, maybe it's reversed. There's mundane life gets in the way. When you think about that, I mean, that's what's fun about Maggie's Plan is it's not what you would expect from a movie about, you know, marriage and affairs.
Yeah, in some ways, the end of the movie comes about 20 minutes in, and then everything sort of starts. But again, you know, the idea of a screwball to me is all about not quite knowing what to expect, and yet it's still a romantic comedy, so you still have certain laws that you're respecting. So you both have the law of unpredictability that you're respecting, and then the law of sort of closure and
good feeling. This could be, I mean, you've had experience in drama and in comedy, but this is a little bit new for you to do the screwball kind of thing. But this could be a drama in the way that it kind of plays out. These are pretty heavy topics.
Absolutely. And it's really just the decision to see it through the lens of the lighter or more comical lens that you absolutely could make a very dramatic movie out of the same subject matter. And that's what's sort of interesting. It's like, because a director's job finally is about finding and maintaining tone. And so once you decide on tone and you commit to it and you get everybody else to come on board with you, what's fascinating is, of course, it has to start with the script, but it's also what's happening on set and how the actors, you know, cleave to the same tone, how they all kind of end up like kind of flocking together into the same tone. I mean, I think it started a little bit with me and Greta, that Greta and I were so, we were both really tight. We had done a lot of work. We had really knew what we wanted in terms of the character. And I think that made the other actors safe and feel like they knew where they were going with the rest of it.
How important is it as a director to explore or define that tone with the actors before you start?
I mean, I think it's really important.
How do you
but
do that?
Yeah. It's not the kind of thing is like you can't say it in words.
Right.
You don't say what it is. You have to start with the script. The script has to be, it's almost like a notation in music. And that's true for the DP, the cinematographer as well. They have notes and it's how they play those notes that is the interpretation. It's the same with actors. Words are notes. And we didn't have a lot of improvisation in the movie. But to me, all acting is improvisation in that, you know, this is where, you know, what kind of emotion do you feel in this moment? And how are you going to, what's the timing? And what kind of spin are you going to put on it? And how are you going to make it funny or how are you going to make it sad? And, you know, and you can, as a director, you're always kind of trying to kind of guide people with as few words as possible. And you know, maybe if people are saying a scene quite slowly and momentously, if they can breeze through something that seems like a serious scene, that might be a better way of doing it. And it might actually land harder or better.
For you, I mean, you've had a career as a writer and, you know, screenwriter and also a director and a filmmaker. I mean, is there a part that you like better than others? I mean, do you, as the writer, you know, are adapting this script and putting this script together, that takes care of the tone kind of part. And here comes the directing, which, you know, making sure that it pops out. Do you like one role better than the other?
In terms of writing screenplays and directing, I think I prefer being on set to writing screenplays. I do love writing novels because, like, there you get to control a whole world and every sentence you know, has to stand for itself and is hugely important. Screenplays themselves are kind of blueprints, and they're pleasurable. They're the most pleasurable to write once you've cast and you start to kind of tailor the parts to the actors, the individual actors. Then it gets really fun. It's a little weird when you're writing for people that you have in your head, but you know they have to be supplanted by actual people, in which case you just have to throw out the person you had in your head and rethink it. You know, it's a form of rewriting, I guess.
Rebecca Miller is my guest tonight. The film is Maggie's Plan. It comes out this week. It stars Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore. We'll take a break for the news when we come back. I'd love to talk a little bit about the powerful roles for women in this film. I mean, it's tremendous. Julianne Moore is and Greta Gerwig as well. Both, I was like, these are great characters. And how you get there. I mean, yeah. You've been public about women directors and hiring more women for feature films. And I would like to know what's stopping us from having more films like this. We'll talk with Rebecca Miller about that when we return. Stay with us.
Cool.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest, Rebecca Miller, longtime filmmaker and screenwriter, and her new film, Maggie's Plan, is out in theaters this week, starring Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore. I really loved the movie. I loved New York plays a huge role in it. If you are a fan of New York, you're going to love this. This movie. I loved all the scenic design of this. It's so fun. It's so great to see. It reminds you of a Woody Allen kind of scenic scape that we see. But it's also the women in this movie, the characters are so strong. They're so interesting and so powerful. Is that intentional for you to make women characters, female characters that are not the Hollywood trope?
Well, you know, I mean, I think I kind of write what I know in a way, and I know so many complicated women that's not hard for me. It would be much harder for me to write simplified women that were more, you know, one-dimensional. That would be harder. I think that what's always interesting to me, and it goes for male parent characters as well, is to show contradictory elements in a single character. You know, like Georgette, Julianne Moore's character, she seems rather cold. She's described as a monster. You meet her and you think, oh, wow, yeah, this woman is forbidding. You know, then you get to know her, and actually she's quite a complicated person. She's actually a very caring mother. Yeah. She really loves her husband.
It almost starts off the first time you see her. It almost feels like it's a stereotype of a cold, you know, mother doesn't care. And as the movie unfolds, you see so much more complexity.
Right. And then at the end, you know, she still she will show you these shades of coolness, because the truth is that she is a multi-layered person, or, you know, like a prism, which is all personalities have that prism quality that, you know, depending on how they turn, the light hits in a certain way and a different spectrum comes out of them. And that would be true of Maggie as well, certainly, that, you know, Maggie has a lot of different contradictory elements. She's so funny and goofy on the one hand, and yet she's got real sadness and hurt in her, you know, that you see little glimmers of, and I think make you love her and make you think, you know, feel more connected to her. And, you know, John too can be a very caring, nurturing person, but can also be extremely selfish and go right down the rabbit hole that every writer has the capacity to get lost. Austin. So I think regarding females, you know, I think that it's, to me, it's just they're human beings. And so to me, it's not that much of a stretch.
Another part of this movie that we haven't talked about is it is following the life of writers. Both Julianne Moore and Ethan Hawke in this movie are writers. And, you know, if your life, you grew up, you know, the daughter of Arthur Miller. I mean, how much of understanding the neurosis and the life of a writer plays into Maggie's Plan?
Well, I definitely think I put a bit of myself in Ethan, in that sense of the you know, the ridiculousness of somebody who gets that absorbed into a work of the imagination, you know, and to the point where they just can't get their way out anymore, see their way out anymore. For sure, the absurdity of writers and creative people is something I know very well, and I definitely have used it in the past, and yeah, it just is no exception.
Well, this is the scene where, you know, where Greta Gerwig, Maggie's, you know, wonders if any of the characters are about her, or, you know, like, it seems like at a certain point, as it goes from I'm enamored with your work to now I think you're writing about me, there's an arc even in, you know, the worship of the writer.
Exactly, yeah, the sense that maybe you're being rather used by him, yes,
yeah.
Definitely. And that's always the danger with, I don't think that somebody once described writers as cannibals, and I don't think that's true. I think they're more magpies. I think that's a kinder way of looking at them.
All right, we're talking with Rebecca Miller here. You know, one of the things I mean, one issue in Hollywood, which has been the lack of female directors. There's not many feature-length Hollywood films that are being directed by women. Talk about your relationship with Hollywood and that idea that there aren't as many female directors as there should be.
Well, I think one of the nice things about this film is it brings back some of the best things about when we turn on, you know, TCM. You know, what are we looking for? We're looking for a smart movie that still gives us pleasure. And that's what this is, hopefully. You know, this is a film that gives you that. And a lot of those movies had great female protagonists, actually. So, you know, Katharine Hepburn, for example. These wonderful movies with wonderfully intelligent protagonists. So it's not like a new idea. And I think what we'll discover is that I hope is that there's really an audience of people who want to go to the cinema and see that if it's entertaining enough, they want to go to a movie like that. And the more that word gets out there, the more the studios say, oh, wow, there really is room for these kind of movies. People really do want to have a thoughtful but hilarious time at the movies, you know, and feel like they've had a complete feast, both visually and in terms of the way what, you know, the language and the jokes, but also the ideas, that the ideas are real and complicated like us.
Yeah.
You know, so to me, it's as much that as saying, because I think those are the stories a lot of women are interested in telling and are probably best at perhaps directing. Not that they can't go out and make car chase movies and, you know, in space. That's great. But I personally don't want to make those movies. I want to make movies about human beings. That's what interests me. I'm really interested in character. I think it's, you know, the whole thing about women and minorities in film, it's an employment problem. It's a problem where I think that perhaps if we're seen more as human beings who have strengths and weaknesses, kind of taking sex out of it, it would probably behoove the studios to have some kind of look at some basic prejudices that they are unconsciously having, perhaps. But I think the more we're seen as human beings with strengths of our own, specific strengths that don't only belong to our sex, I think the better we'll be.
Yeah, it's hard for, you know, I'm not in that industry. It's hard to read those and have a hard misunderstanding of why there aren't. I mean, I don't understand when I think about movies. And we had someone in here not too long ago was talking about that Hollywood just doesn't do movies that are $25-30 million anymore. The only thing they're really interested in is $100 million plus, and that usually is car chase type, you know, superhero type
movies. Right,
the
mid-range film, which was, you know, movies like Kramer versus Kramer or Terms of Endearment, a lot of the movies that you look back and you think, oh, those were wonderful movies. Those were the mid-range movies that were made for a good price, but they were still, you know, they were more modest than the huge tentpole movies, but they were a good size movie. I think that I'd like to bring that back myself, along with some other people who
is that possible to do? I mean, is the industry looking for that?
It's about the market. And, you know, the more people that go to this movie, quite frankly, if they see a movie like this succeeding, then I think that they'll be like, oh, yeah, this is something that we'd like to invest in more. And I think that's how it goes. It's supply and demand, I think.
Is there a possibility in your career, you see this happening with a lot of successful filmmakers who just say, you know what, I don't need Hollywood. We can make movies and we can go straight to our audience. We can use, you know, crowdfunding, whatever it is. But we're not necessarily at the whim of hoping that someone picks up.
Well, I personally do need distribution of some kind. But I am an independent filmmaker. I'll probably keep making films independently. But that doesn't mean for nothing. I just mean that the problem with for me is that I love to have artistic control. And that's been part of how I've been able to make the films that I make and also draw the actors, because the actors like to know that the buck stops with me, that I'm going to be the person cutting the film, that not some stranger is going to come over and take it over. And that's a contract that, you know, you can't underestimate the power of that. So I'd say, yeah, I still want to work with studios. I'm very blessed that Sony Classics is putting this out. You know, they're a great, great distribution company. But yeah, it's a bit of a tightrope in terms of like how to preserve your autonomy, but at the same time make the movie you want to make.
Rebecca Miller, filmmaker, the new film Maggie's Plan is in theaters this week. It stars Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore. Rebecca, thanks so much for being my guest tonight.
Thank you so much.